Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Stuart Tompkins has been on the show before, and he's usually involved with an organization called Nordic Naturals. He's with, at one time, was with the World Health Organization, and he seems to have drawn a correlation, and there's been a lot of research involved, that when we don't have healthy brain food, we can do some things that we normally wouldn't. And we've seen an increase, I believe we've seen an increase in the last number of years, quite a major increase. And there seems to be a lot of very unstable people. So Stuart's on the line. Where are you at right now, Stu?
I am in Chicago, my hometown.
Yeah, that's right. That's where we talked to you last time. So you travel all over the place, don't you?
All over the world. Just came back from Ireland.
Really?
We went to Galway and Kerry and Dublin, giving lectures all over. I'm headed out to Baltimore here in a couple of days. We're going to be giving a big talk with Captain Joe Hiblin, a psychiatrist who's over at the National Institutes of Health, about this very topic, and then out to Australia for 3 weeks to give lectures up and down the whole country there.
You think people are receiving it? Are they listening?
Loud and clear.
That's good to see.
Loud and clear. I'll tell you why. Circumstance rather than virtue. I'm not saying that they want to listen. I'm saying the noise is so loud that it's deafening. We're forced to listen.
Hmm. So we're going to talk about what is causing people to go off the deep end, I guess, and do some horrible things, shoot people up. I mean, this to me, I don't have the evidence to prove it, but it seems like it's an epidemic.
I would call it a pandemic. It's a sad reality that we are probably just in between massive school shootings. I'm not an alarmist. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm just looking at the data, and the data is suggesting that we're just taking a little break in between the next violent outburst. And that's causing many in the field of nutrition to ask the hard question, is there some grouping or individual nutritional deficiency, some organic disturbance, maybe some wholesale change when you look at all of the contamination that's in our environment? Is that contributing to it? Is there better mental health screening so we have more people that we can categorize as having mental health challenges? Do we have too many people medicated? Do we have not enough people medicated? Whatever it is, there's something pretty dramatic going on.
Now, I probably have asked you this before because I think there's a lot of factors. Certainly, you know, you explained to me the last time we talked about the deficiency in the last 20 years or 30 years in our foods has really led to a lot of this. But also, do you think there's some programming going on with all the violence, or at least being desensitized?
The only reason that I question that is from some of the data that I've read looking at other parts of the world where young people are equally as exposed.
Okay.
So that when you look at the attendance at violent action movies and the online gaming community, if that was the single driving force, we have the confusion in embracing the fact that in places like Iceland, Norway, and Japan, for example, remember a couple years ago when we had the one mass murder in Norway?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
When I was in Buda, Norway, which is actually a place.
No kidding. That's pretty cool.
Can't make that up. They were there, and they know I'm from Chicago, which has had a couple of, among other distinctions, has been considered at different times one of, if not the murder capital of America.
Hmm.
And, of course, we have the history of Al Capone, bang, bang, all that.
Right.
So they were telling me when I was there in Buda, Norway, about the murder.
Hmm.
And I thought, you mean the murder that happened yesterday? And they had to straighten me out. No, the murder. It was with the murder this year. No, the murder, the one murder that they had in Buda, Norway.
Hmm.
Now, again, it's a small country. I don't want to make any generalizations at all, but when we look at, say, homicide mortality rates in places that have higher levels of some nutrients and lower levels of other nutrients, whether or not they're armed, whether or not they're watching violent movies or violent video games, it's really hard to explain why we have such high levels of violent crime in the industrialized Western world.
In any way, could it be a combination? What if you're exposed to these things, and I guess I'm going to relay my own feeling on this, what's happened to me in my life. You know, when I was younger, Stuart, I used to play video games. Not that they were horribly violent back then, probably. It was more like Pong.
Yeah, me too. Same age, probably.
Atari. You know, you play Atari, some Nintendo, and football, stuff like that. But I noticed when I was a younger guy, I watched a lot of violent movies, and it never made me want to go out and hurt anybody. But it desensitized me. I was not as feeling or as sensitive. And so I marry a woman who's pretty sensitive, and she doesn't like that stuff, so we don't watch it. And over the years, I've returned to this guy that feels things a lot more. Now, is that just me changing, or is that because I've removed myself from these things that I think kind of, they desensitize? You know, you see a murder on TV, it's like, oh, not a big deal, you know? Now I can't stand looking at it.
Well, you're probably not alone. There's one of the great thought leaders in this area. I hate to use all the complicated jargon, but it's a term that we need to use now. He calls it epigenetics.
What is it called?
Epigenetics.
Epi.
Epigenetics meaning above the genes.
Okay.
So what are the factors that are involved in turning genes on or off? So if you look up epigenetics and do some reading on epigenetics, you're probably going to stumble into a man. His name is Bruce Lipton, PhD, and he wrote a book called The Biology of Belief. And he talks about exactly what you said in his book. Now, he's interesting because he's a leading expert in science and cell membrane biophysiology. He's become kind of a more avant-garde voice in looking at sort of the interconnectedness of the universe, but he's not some new age guy. He's a hardcore scientist that came to sort of believe. Mm-hmm. And he writes eloquently about what you talked about in looking at unborn children in their mothers living in war zones. Mm-hmm. And the effect of the fear and how the fear and the anger causes this change in our chemistry. So how the external environment influences our genetic expression. So there really may be something to that.
Mm.
Now, my argument is, and I have to be a bit of a reductionist when I'm talking about one of the epigenetic influences, if we are what we eat, meaning everything that we eat that we don't turn into energy, then becomes us what's left over. Some suggest that what we eat can set the stage for a good life, or we can have some disease. We all die somehow. No one lives forever. So what I like to try to do is look at the long-term health consequences, long-term health outcomes, long-term mental health outcomes, with the variables that we may not be able to control, meaning we can't get people to stop watching violent movies or playing violent video games. We're never going to unarm in this country. Are we probably on the same page about that?
I don't know. To me, there seems a push to remove our arms.
But do you see how is there total gridlock? I mean, I have to say this is a little tongue-in-cheek, as they say, but I think we've sort of agreed subconsciously to never legislate about anything ever that would require any heavy lifting or big changes or compromise.
I don't know. You know, you see things happen, and I think in my world where I live, and it's a little different from yours, Stuart, they're done deliberately, and they're done to get the American public to rise up and say, you should take that away from us because this is going to kill us, and we don't need to have guns. And this is how governments have done it throughout eons to disarm the public so they then could control them even more. And I see some of that happening. Now, whether or not it's going to, some of these incidents could be related to that.
Well, I think we make, and you know, and you remind me when I get to come on your show, one thing, and I'm not flattering you, I appreciate that you are pushing me to think more deeply about these things.
Mm, good.
Because when you look at cultures, let's then use Great Britain, for example,
mm-hmm.
where there are lower levels of weapons per capita,
mm-hmm.
and still a lot of murders with hammers and rocks. I follow the whole conversation like you do.
Mm-hmm.
Again, if there is a common thread, which is so hard to find, I'm suggesting that there may be nutritional deficiencies, organic disturbances, there may be unresolved inflammation in the brain, lack of proper brain cell-to-brain cell communication, because we're not eating the stuff that makes up the brain needed for optimal brain function. So when we look at Japan, which, now this is all out of the journal Lancet, which is very well respected, and one of my heroes at the National Institutes of Health, most people don't know, when you get up to 150 pounds of seafood per year per person, the lowest rate of homicide mortality.
Yeah, I know, you told me that before, and you said the British, didn't they do like research on that too?
Yes, and thank you for reminding me of that, because it's an important part of the conversation. They took young, violent offenders, and then, because the Brits were trying to find some way, could we influence, it's a lot of money to keep people jailed all the time.
Right.
They gave these crazy, violent people a little bit better nutrition, some minerals, vitamins, and some omega-3 fish oil. Again, I'm not a reductionist.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this was interesting because you can control what somebody eats when they're in prison if they can't get to the commissary and there's no outside fast food. They found nearly a 50% reduction in violent outbursts.
Yeah, that's just amazing, isn't it?
Now, it needs to be repeated. I know all the people that listen that are very science-oriented. Okay, fine, it was one study, few hundred people. You know, I know people at Department of Defense and former investigators from the Pentagon. Military medicine is all over this because our soldiers are killing themselves at unprecedented rates.
Right. That's a good point as well. They come back over here, and what happens to them?
And yeah, we've always had post-traumatic stress disorder, but I remember being at a conference once, and I met another captain in the Army who was telling me that they were looking at the correlation between the foods that were consumed during the First World War through every military incursion, and then looking at the levels of post-traumatic stress disorder. And I did not know that during WW1, that one of the primary foodstuffs that soldiers could take with them on the battlefield was canned fish. Isn't that interesting?
Mm-hmm.
Because it wouldn't be poisoned by mustard gas. It was sealed and safe. And I eat a lot of canned salmon and canned sardines. And I'll tell you, if you ate a can of sardines 3 times a day, you may not love the taste all every minute of every day, but you'd certainly have a lot of protein.
And the cats would love you.
Which is always a benefit.
You would be popular with the kitties.
Now, do you know how much omega-3 and fish the kids are eating now?
Probably very little.
I mean, ask yourself as a concerned parent if you're listening. Do your kids eat sardines, anchovies, wild-caught salmon on a regular basis? If they don't, you're missing the structural material that makes up the brain.
But
so
you
again,
know,
I'm not a reductionist at all.
But you know, we've talked about this too. Not everybody eats that. Not everybody has access to that. Didn't you say... Omega-3s were in cattle at one time?
We had far higher levels. You go back to 1909, which is where the NIH has looked from 1909 to 1999. You look at cattle and eggs and all these farm animals we ate, they had far higher levels of omega-3. Are you ready? Primarily because they weren't eating all of the grain we used to fatten them up. And then when we switched from fish meal to soy meal, see, the one part of me that you've been trying to get out
mm-hmm.
is my belief that it's an orchestrated
mm-hmm.
attack from agriculture, purely driven by the dollar. I've replaced any part of me that thought it was any kind of conspiracy. It's completely industry. They have known for a long time everybody has to eat. And if you switch the entire food recommendations from the four basic food groups, do you remember that, to the food pyramid?
Mm-hmm.
You look back at the food pyramid now, it said the base of your diet should be carbohydrates. And then they told us to stop using butter and lard and tallow. They promised us that that would kill us, and everyone should be using Mazola corn oil.
Right.
That's reinforced by industry and their cronies and the lobbyists. They have their scientists. They go work at FDA. They go work at the agriculture groups. They help with these public health recommendations. They're there at the American Heart Association. They're taking money from Unilever. See, you knew you were going to get this out of me, right?
Stuart Topp, he always tries to be Mr. Scientific. Mr. I have all the facts. I have all the research. And I say, how about, and we don't talk about this during the show, when we get done with it or before it, I'll say, well, maybe we should go here. And, you know, you kind of are hesitant to do that. But I like it when you can, when you go another route. That just so I'll agree with you on all of that, but I'll take it another step, and I'm sure you won't comment on this, but this is why we have a drug industry. That also is affecting us because people have, we're not balanced. We don't have the balance from our foods, which keep us balanced emotionally. And then we have, you said the agriculture industry is there to make money. Pharmaceuticals, same thing. And we get drugged up, and I think this is contributing to people doing things that they maybe wouldn't do. How are you going to answer that one, Stuart?
Well, I think it's the philosophical question is it the chicken or the egg which came first?
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you're dancing to me.
Well, you know I am. Okay. I will tell you, 2 years ago when the report came out, and I normally have my references at the tip of my tongue, but I don't. It was a couple of years ago. They looked at the high rate of prescribing certain selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors like Paxil and Prozac and looked at how they work or don't work, and they found out that only in major, major, major depressive disorders did they really work. And I remember clearly reading about one of the lead authors of the paper was quoted saying, well, at least we know the placebos work.
Hmm.
I mean, that's such a ridiculous answer.
I know.
So what we're suggesting, and some are in this camp, I'm certainly of this camp, that when you eliminate the socioeconomic external stress factors, when you separate the pure possibility that some of us may really be depressed and need heavy-duty medication, when mm-hmm. you say you take that 10% out, that it may be genetic or it may be really serious,
mm-hmm.
would we have as many medicated people in terms of mental health if we had our diet and then, to your point, our emotional life more balanced?
Well, you know, you're roughly around my age. I'm 53 years old. I don't know how old you are, Stuart. But as a kid, this didn't exist, what we're talking about. People were more balanced. And I didn't know many people that had emotional issues. And it just, the majority of kids I went to school with were pretty well balanced, you know? I don't know if it was like that for you, but it's changed in my perspective immensely in the last 20 to 30 years.
And I'd love to see the real-time data on that because I agree in theory. I think part of the concern is also like when we talk about autism or Asperger's.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was that huge push. As you probably recall, it was the thimerosal, it was the mercury that was in the vaccines that was causing all these things.
Right.
I don't know if they really ever proved that or mm-hmm. disproved that.
Right. Yeah.
I think what they found was that there was the parameters of screening for autism and Asperger's that we've gotten obsessed with labeling people. Oh, right. And you've got attention deficit. Oh, you've got hyperactivity disorder. You know, you've got this. How about some people, when we were kids, someone was just spastic.
Yeah, they were spastic. I was a little spastic. Good thing I was a kid back then, you know?
Because now you might have been diagnosed as hyperactive and then given some kind of a drug. And what I'm saying is, I don't want to exclude, you know, some people say, and this was interesting, a colleague of mine, I was just in D.C., said this. One of the problems that nutrition people have is that they say everything within the four walls of this here health food store is good, and everything within the four walls of this pharmacy is bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge problem.
Yeah, I don't agree with that statement.
No, I know you don't. I know, but I think that somewhere in between, when we talk about the possibility that pharmaceutical companies are profiting from the poor health, maybe rather than inspiring the poor health, there's certainly opportunistic, I call them saprophytes, a fungus that lives on dead and decaying matter, which is us.
Mm-hmm.
So aspirin has the singular action of blocking all the compounds that are created from the vegetable oils in our body. Most people don't know that.
Really?
Aspirin works by blocking, you've probably heard this term before, COX inhibitor.
Mm-hmm.
It's a it's the enzyme that converts the fat from soybean, safflower, sunflower, cottonseed oil that converts into another one that you get in eating meat products. So as we eat more meat products and more vegetable oils, every time you trigger your immune response, see every show we go deeper,
mm-hmm.
you cleave these fats that are converted from these enzymes into compounds that make your blood thick like Elmer's glue, increase sensitivity to pain. The way that aspirin works to thin your blood and decrease pain is by basically taking that enzyme system and deactivating it. So in 1969, John Vane, who since was knighted, so it's Sir John Vane, discovered that aspirin alleviates pain and inflammation by blocking omega-6 that you get from soybean oil, corn oil, safflower, sunflower, in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
So they figured out a long time ago, we would never change our diet, let's just give everybody an aspirin every day.
And if really, I guess doing the math, if people started to rely on that, it's kind of in line with what I was saying. It's like things were fine with most people in the 60s and the 70s. And then my son came along, was born in 1980. And I noticed with his generation that there were a lot of kids born with attention deficit.
Yep.
And I think there definitely is something there, but it could be very much like you say, the nutrition has changed. And something has definitely changed in those, because there weren't many kids, and maybe I'm not a scientist and not a doctor. There weren't many really hyper kids or kids that had trouble paying attention. And I think it's a huge change, just my own personal feeling of my experience being around that.
Well, I agree.
And you can quote me on that the next time you're talking in front of the World Health Organization. T.J. Ryan of Out There says when he was a kid, it wasn't like this.
Yeah, and he's not that far out there.
And I'm
sure. In fact, my hero in this area is going to speak. I get to introduce him. This is in 2 weeks in Baltimore. Captain Hiblin, who's with the National Institutes of Health. And at some time, when he gets out of working for the government, I will make sure that we can get him on your show.
Okay, great.
As a guest. Right now that he's working for NIH, it was a real coup that we got him to speak for Nordic Naturals, but he's not going to talk about us.
Right.
Clearly.
Not.
But I want people, you should look him up. It's Joe Hiblin.
Joe Hiblin.
H-I-B-B-E-L-N.
Okay.
And when you wear that uniform and you're a psychiatrist and you've written 250 peer-reviewed papers, I remember this, TJ. We had a big conference in D.C. We invited Pentagon, Department of Defense, and FDA. It was a brain health research education conference. I got to MC. The whole thing was great. Captain Hiblin gets on stage. He looks at everybody and says, the day we accept that the brain, the mind, and the body is interconnected, we will write better public health policy. So you've got all these people in the audience sitting there saying, yeah, that's right.
Hmm.
You tell that to a layperson like us, is the brain and the body and the mind all interconnected? Well, of course. In fact, there's a lecture on YouTube. If you go to Joe Hiblin discusses the important role of omega-3 fatty acid plays in mental health. Everything that I say that people may perceive as hyperbolic, you should listen to Captain Hiblin.
Okay, that's cool. So, Joe supports, he's supporting what you're saying. And you've done, how long have you been on this trail? How long have you been on this, Stuart?
I've been on this now 7 years with the omega-3. Before that, 10 years with botanical medicine. Spice extracts. Did you ever have the Dr. Ingram on your show that talks about the oregano oil?
Yes, I did. Yes, I've had him on more.
For him.
I've had him on more than once.
Yeah, I used to work with him. Fantastic product, great scientist, great mind, great clinician. I worked for him. Before that, I worked in a health food store when I was a kid. So I've been on this crusade for a long time because I was sick. I was so sick. They told me I would never get off the asthma inhaler. They told me I would never be a normal kid. I was allergic to my own skin. So I was motivated, really, really, really motivated to find out about it.
That's interesting. I'm surprised. You know, I'm glad you brought up Dr. What was his first name?
Dr. Cass Ingram.
Cass Ingram. Because the oil of oregano, you know, he sent me some as a sample. And it sat in my medicine cabinet for quite a while. And then one night my wife woke up and she had a throbbing pain below her ear. And she says to me, "I think I've got a tumor." That was the first thing out of her mouth. And I said, "No, you're fine. I'm sure it's some kind of virus or something." And we didn't have anything in the house because we don't carry a lot of drugs. And so I rubbed some of that just below her ear and on her gland. The next day, it was totally gone. Totally gone. So maybe it's just a coincidence. A couple of weeks later, she gets another shooting pain there. I said, "I'm sure you've got some kind of virus or whatever." Of course, I'm a doctor, right? And so I rubbed that on there. And gone. Never came back. And I've used it for so many things. So I think it's cool that you're kind of endorsing that, Stuart.
Because there, and what one challenge that I had, and this is was a professional challenge, I know that a lot of those things work.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have enough data and enough science. The omega-3 story is so good that it's a wonderful gateway to help people understand. Maybe we want to explore, as I said at the top of the show, circumstance rather than virtue.
Mm-hmm.
If healthcare is going to be out of the reach of so many people, the idea of folk medicine, I don't like to call it alternative medicine. It may be the only shot you've got.
Right. We have to really start doing preventive maintenance because, like you say, who knows where this healthcare plan is going to go and who's going to be able to afford it. And on top of that, if we have a socialized medicine program, don't we wind up waiting in line and dying sometimes before we get treatment?
What's interesting you say that. I just came back from Ireland, and I travel all over the world, and I've spent a lot of time in Canada, spent a lot of time in the UK, and I talk to a lot of people. You know, they kind of have an option. You've got the public scheme, and then you can have private insurance. And I think we are faced with a very, very, very difficult question. You know, if you're a good, moral, upright contributor to society, but you don't have health care coverage and you get cancer, and then you're punished for being a bad person and lose everything, We have to ask ourselves, is that really the system that we want? Because if we do, I just think we need to be honest about it.
Yeah.
That's where I think we get into trouble, is that we keep pandering to the people that sort of are our echo chamber, and then we fail to be direct. Some people just want it to be like that. Fight for yourselves. Fend for yourselves. Figure it out. One way or another, it doesn't excuse us. I remember the Institute of Medicine wrote a paper called Too Little, Too Late, Care Without Coverage. Too Little, Too Late. And it said we could save something like 16 or 18, but it wasn't a huge number. It was something. I can't remember the exact amount, but it was probably like about 100,000 lives per year, something to that effect, if we had universal health. People could go to the doctor all day long for a job, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Versus if we got every single person to finally quit smoking, there is no redeeming value, period. It's a drain on everybody. Quit smoking. I know it's your right to do that, but stop it, because there's no upside at all. Eat less, work out more. You know, some may disagree with me on that, right? Eat less, right. Work out more. Stop eating a bag of sugar the size of your body every year. Eat less vegetable oils and more fish, and eat more green leafy vegetables. They calculated from this. Harvard did this report. It was amazing. You'd save like 4.5 million people a year if you did that. That's what we should be teaching in schools. We should be teaching nutrition in schools at the earliest possible age. You know, you could change an entire household. Don't work on the parents. It's too late.
Right. That's a good point.
Real Once you're setting your ways, how about you have the kid come home and say, oh, what are we having tonight? You know, well, we're having, you know what, I don't want to say something. Whatever I'll say, I'll offend somebody.
Go ahead and offend somebody.
I don't know. Tonight we're having breaded fried corn dog and french fries. And a fried Snicker with a giant soda pop.
That sounds good.
If the kid comes home and says, you know what, I learned all about that in school. I'm not going to eat that stuff. That would be good for everybody. That doesn't mean you can't eat something like that on occasion. I'm not an extremist.
Right. Right, I agree with you.
But if nutrition is the foundation of all of the epigenetic, let's tie it back to that big concept, if we don't have control over the media, if we don't have control over this complicated conversation of arm or not arm, if all those things are totally out of our grasp and our control, then by circumstance, again, rather than virtue, what's left within our purview, what's left within our control is what we eat, because what we eat that doesn't get burned as energy becomes us. And the brain is a computer made out of fat. And if you have enough of the right kind of fats in the brain works more effectively. You can respond to stress more effectively. You can increase the cell-to-cell communication, enhancing the neurotransmission. You can have a better brain and better reaction to life if you have more omega-3 in your head.
Right. I definitely think that makes a heck of a lot of sense. And that's why when I played Pong, I didn't go around hitting people with a tennis racket, you know, after playing. That's my little theory, Stuart, by the way. And you can tell that to anybody you come across. You come across Joe Hiblin, you tell him that story.
I'm going to tell him as soon as I see him. I'm going to see him in 2 weeks. I'm going to say, you listen to TJ, and we're going to get him on your show once he comes out of working for the government.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, and if people want to find out more about Nordic Naturals, there's a website.
NordicNaturals.com, and I finally have a page where I can put whatever I want up that has nothing to do with supplements, just all the science that I find, mm-hmm. And that's Stuart, S-T-U-A-R-T, Tomk, T-O-M-C, on Facebook, Stuart Tomk, and I can post whatever I want up there. I finally caved into social media, because I want a place to put up really smart stuff. So here's one thing about my page, TJ.
Mm-hmm.
You will never see a picture of me eating a noodle salad.
You could do that once in a while. It wouldn't hurt you.
Probably, but I'm not going to post a picture of here I am with my noodle salad. I'm raising the rigor and the bar by having smarter conversations.
Well, I appreciate you talking to me today. And as always, it's a pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Hope you did, too.
Thank you. It was really great. Have a good day, my friend.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.